We begin in Iraq, where there is apparently a process for the embattled Iraqi government to reconstitute itself.
This is a multiple allied interest in having a unity government that can move Iraq to the future and pull it back from this precipice.
That's Secretary of State John Kerry at a news conference in Brussels on Wednesday, talking about a national unity government. What would that consist of? According to the Iraqi constitution, parliament is required to convene within 15 days of the certification of election results of Iraq's highest court, making Monday, July 1st, the latest procedural day for something important to happen. Meanwhile, ISIS fighters advanced on the city of Haditha on the strategic Euphrates River. Joining me now from the ground in northern Iraq is Jane Araf, a journalist covering Iraq for the Al Jazeera America and the Christian Science Monitor networks. Welcome back, Jane.
Thanks, John.
So, Jane, just give me a sense of what is this procedural business that could possibly have any impact on what's going on with ISIS right now?
Well, I'm here in Baghdad, and as you can imagine, the capital is kind of swirling with all this talk about who's going to form the government. Is Prime Minister Maliki going to be able to cobble together this coalition? But I think the key question we have to ask ourselves is, how much is this really going to matter? Now, as you mentioned, there is a constitutional deadline for Parliament to meet, and they will do so. But the really tough thing is, he is battling to remain Prime Minister in a country that's substantially different than it was less than 3 weeks ago, when the second biggest city fell to ISIL, the fighters. So basically, he's working hard to bring in the Sunnis, to bring in the Kurds, to get enough support that he can remain prime minister. And that will at least, if it works, reduce some of the political paralysis that's been part of the reason why this country is so dysfunctional in security terms.
Would Shiites have to declare themselves in solidarity with Sunnis, and Kurds in this parliamentary vote, and would it in any way outweigh or outvote what seem to be the facts on the ground in places like Fallujah?
Well, one of the big problems here is that the Sunnis particularly are very divided. There isn't one Sunni faction, so there isn't a solid bargaining block or political faction that can be negotiated with. The Kurds are the most cohesive, of course, because they've been fighting a common front for years now. But essentially what's going to happen in Parliament is it's going to be largely ceremonial. They will meet. They will say they've met that constitutional deadline. But we won't have a government then. It's just Parliament meeting. Now, last time around, when Maliki tried to put together a coalition government under much more favorable circumstances, it took 9 months. So he doesn't have 9 months now. He barely has a few weeks. But nobody's expecting that when Parliament meets next week, there will be a new government. That process is expected to take a little bit longer.
What do people say on the streets of Baghdad about the possibility of Parliament and the court system and the government that's in place creating some sort of national unity government that would push Nouri al-Maliki aside on some level?
It's a really interesting dynamic here, because despite the fact that a lot of people actually did go out and vote in the last elections almost 3 months ago now, there isn't really an expectation that politicians can do very much. I was in Qadamiya this week, which is the main, there's a Shia shrine there that is one of the holiest sites in Shia Islam. And it's part of the reason that in this conflict with the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, Baghdad is the prize. It has a huge Shia shrine. It's the capital city. It was in history the center of a huge Islamic empire. So people there were saying they don't think that a new prime minister can help. They don't think the old prime minister can help. Really, what this has come down to is the scary prospect of militias again coming into the streets, and that's what's happening. Shia religious leaders have told their people that their obligation is, if they can, to join the Iraqi security forces and fight. And at that shrine and in other places in Baghdad, that's exactly what people are prepared to do. They're not waiting for their political leaders.
Let's talk before we go about this city of Haditha that's right in the center of the Euphrates River. Is there any sense that ISIS would take control of one of those dams and would do something to actually radically damage or disrupt the agricultural sector of Iraq even cause flooding in the cities?
Now, this is a really interesting thing about ISIS, because it's not the al-Qaeda that we knew. The ISIS that went into Mosul and so effectively took it, helped, of course, by the retreat of the Iraqi security forces, has teamed up with former Baathists, it's teamed up with tribal leaders, and it is launching a relatively sophisticated attempt to run that city in its fashion. But it's doing things like handing out salaries, making sure the streets are clean. It wouldn't be expected to blow up the Haditha Dam. That's not in its interest. As one Iraqi government official said to me, in any war, there are areas of common interest. Now, he was explaining why when they held the Beji oil refinery, they were prepared to run it. I'm talking about the gunmen. Because it's not in their interest to be cutting off electricity or drowning the residents in nearby towns. They want this to be their new Islamic State. They want to be the rulers, but they want to be what they see as effective rulers, and they still do need not to completely terrify the population. And there's a realization there that they're using calibrated terror. They're telling people that they are after security forces, the government, but the people themselves will be safe.
They want a functioning Iraq. They don't want a slaughterhouse, that's for sure. Jane Iraf, journalist covering Iraq for Al Jazeera America, talking about what is the apparent mission of ISIS at this point. Jane Iraf was speaking to us from Baghdad. Jane, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.